to the edge of your chair to keep you in suspense.
Steuben.
Lloyd.
Another hopping night at Roosevelt Field Air Traffic Control, I see.
That surprises you?
Well, given the way you insisted I come in early, I was expecting a little more than nothing.
And you'll get it. I asked you to clock in early because I wanted you to see something.
Here, at 10:45 p.m., if it gets any more dead around here, the only thing I'll see is the inside of my eyelids.
Lloyd, how long have you been working air traffic control here at Roosevelt Field?
Only since December. I transferred from Idlewild. Why?
Because, my boy, May 3rd is a very special date here.
Special? How?
If I tried to describe it, you'd never believe me. You'll have to experience it for yourself.
Just how long am I going to have to wait?
Mayday. Mayday. Mayday.
It's starting now.
Mayday. Mayday.
Scanner picked up something.
Oh?
November, Gulf.
Sounds like a distress call.
Mike, Papa,
not on the emergency frequency, though.
DH,
way lower. 75 kilohertz down, near ultra-low. Let me see if I can get a clearer
last
signal.
Known position, 41 degrees latitude by 58 degrees longitude. Altitude, 3,000 feet. 90 minutes fuel remaining.
November, Golf, Romeo.
Don't.
Mayday.
He won't hear you anyway.
Mayday.
What do you mean,
Mayday.
Don't? It's a Mayday call. I've got to answer it.
It'll all become clear soon enough.
It's crystal clear now.
Please, trust me on this.
I should at least triangulate his position.
It won't work. Believe me, I've tried.
But,
Lloyd, we're just witnesses to this. Nothing more.
What does that even mean, Steuben?
It means the only thing to do now is wait and watch. When it's over, I'll explain.
Mayday. Mayday.
It may not make sense then either, but at least you'll know.
November Golf.
All right. It's your head in the noose if we get in trouble for this.
We won't.
Off course in heavy fog. Last known position, 41 degrees latitude by 58 degrees longitude. Altitude.
Excuse me. Miss, you can't come in here.
900 feet.
Miss!
Shh!
But
85
just
minutes
watch.
Fuel remaining. Is there anyone out there? Anyone at all? Please, someone. Just talk to me.
Hello? Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. And you're hearing me. Are you?
Yes.
Thank heaven. I was starting to feel like the last man on Earth.
Well, you don't know for certain that you're not. I mean, I'm a woman.
Point taken. In any case, I'm grateful for you, miss.
Where are you calling from?
If I knew the answer to that, I wouldn't be sending out a Mayday signal.
Sorry, that was a foolish question.
No need to be sorry. I'm the one who got himself into this situation. To answer you, miss, I think I'm about 300 miles east of the American coast. But I can't be certain. My navigation is out. And there's heavy fog, and I'm running low on fuel.
Oh, no.
Well, I'm not out yet.
No, of course not. and you might spy land at any moment.
Precisely. But I should at least introduce myself before I touch down in front of a crowd of tens of thousands. Archie Mackay, at your service.
I'm Cecile Potter. Wait, aren't you the aviator who's flying solo from Ireland to Newfoundland?
Well, I was. Before I took a wrong turn, that is.
I read all about you in the Post today.
And you'll be reading even more about me tomorrow, I expect.
When you make your triumphant landing, you mean?
Yes. Yes. That's what I mean.
I thought as much, Mr. Mackay.
Where are you located, Miss Potter? You mentioned the Post.
I'm at Roosevelt Field on Long Island. New York, you know.
Ah, yes. It seems as if I've drifted a bit too far south. You work at the airfield. You'll forgive me for saying so, but you don't sound like an air traffic controller.
Oh, no, I'm not. But my father is. I just came to bring him his supper. He had to step out for a moment.
Ah, answering a call to nature.
Yes.
I only ask because I could do with one of those myself right about now.
I can only imagine. Just the thought of all that water below you. Oh, I mean...
No, you're absolutely right. Purely psychological, I know. I'm flying too high to hear the waves at all. But knowing something is purely psychological doesn't make it any less powerful.
No, I suppose not. Oh, I hear my father coming back now. I put him on the microphone.
Wait. Sorry. It's just that there's nothing he can do for me that you can't. And besides, I have no doubt that you're far more charming to converse with.
Don't be so sure. You've never talked to my father. He's a smooth one, dear old dad.
Well, perhaps he can get on the radio a bit later. I apologize, Miss Potter. I don't mean to keep you hanging like this.
But you're not. Not at all. As luck would have it, I don't have anywhere else I need to be right now. And even if there was, there's nowhere else I'd rather be than on here speaking with you. Oh, my goodness. Was that terribly brazen of me? Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
Well, if you made yourself blush, I'll never be any the wiser. And anyway, if it makes you feel a little less brazen, there's nowhere else I'd rather be either. Besides, on terra firma, I mean.
So I've already dropped to second on the list. Another 20 minutes and I'll be below the second cousin who pushed you off a swing when you were 4.
How did you know about Cousin Jeff? Are you a clairvoyant?
I must be, because I knew you were going to ask me that.
Oh, really?
Yes, really.
All right, then tell me. Have you had any visions about my future?
But of course. You'll be back on dry land soon, Mr. Mackay. Very soon.
Well, if you say so, then it must be so.
And don't you forget that.
Oh, I shan't forget, Miss Potter. I shan't forget.
Would it be all right if I ask you a question?
You know, even if I was offended, it's not like I can get up and leave, right?
No, you're the very definition of a captive audience.
In that case, ask away.
I was just wondering, what made you decide to try to be the first man to fly solo across the Atlantic?
At this moment, I'd have to answer. Momentary lapse of judgment.
I'm serious.
So am I.
Mr. Mackay?
All right. What drove me to attempt this? I suppose the same reason why Amundsen trekked to the South Pole, why Whymper climbed the Matterhorn, why Magellan circumnavigated the globe. Because it was there, just waiting for someone to take up the challenge.
Really?
Well, that's the reason any red-blooded explorer would give, at any rate.
But that's not the truth, is it?
No.
Then why?
I was born and raised in Helensburgh, Dunbartonshire. I was never terribly bright. I know that must come as a shock, given my present situation. You don't have to be that quick to agree with me.
Sorry. I had a tickle in my throat.
Oh, of course. Shall I continue now?
Yes, please.
Anyway, I wasn't especially gifted athletically, or good with numbers, or business-minded, or, well, you get the idea. But flying was the one thing at which I excelled. I was an ace in the Great War, then left the Royal Flying Corps to work as a test pilot for de Havilland. Dangerous occupation, unsatisfying in its way. But I needed something more.
Something more?
A legacy of some sort to leave behind after my days are at an end, to remind people that once upon a time a man named Archie Mackay existed.
But there are all sorts of ways to leave a legacy behind. Why, even children can be a legacy.
Only I never got married, never had any children.
But you're not that old. You still have time.
I think we both know better.
Now we'll have no more of that sort of talk, Mr. Mackay.
I wish I could share your optimism, Miss Potter. But the fuel gauge isn't cooperating.
How much fuel do you have left?
Oh, about 70 minutes worth, more or less. Less, definitely less. I'll have to speak with the engineers at de Havilland about the accuracy of their fuel gauges. Shocking.
When the engine starts to miss like that, how much longer do you have?
Not long. If I power down to near stall speed, I can milk a few more minutes out of it.
Are you going to cut altitude too?
Yes. I'll start working my way down, close to the deck. Better to be there
When you drift right down onto the tarmac here at Roosevelt Field, just as your prop turns its last.
Something like that, yes.
And then you climb out of your plane to greet a crowd that has suddenly appeared, just to catch a glimpse of that courageous pioneer, Archie MacKay.
Good heavens! I knew I should have prepared a speech.
Not to worry, Mr. MacKay. I'll have one written for you in no time.
Splendid. It's probably for the best anyway. Most of the time, I can't even read my own scribbles.
I can't read my own either. But there's a typewriter down in the airport office.
Well, it sounds as if we're all set. Now all that's left to do is for me to stick that landing and taxi up to my adoring throng of well-wishers.
Oh, I should see if I can get a bottle of champagne for the occasion.
Champagne? I thought you Americans had enacted prohibition.
We did, but, you know, for a special occasion.
I haven't even touched down in the United States yet, and I'm already a potential criminal.
Well, you might be anyway. Did you remember to bring your passport?
You know, I hadn't thought of it. Was expecting to land in Newfoundland, after all. And Canada is a member of the Commonwealth. Unlike you treasonous Yanks.
Treasonous Yanks, are we? Oh, you're really in trouble now, Mr. MacKay.
Yes, yes. I am indeed, Miss Porter.
Sorry. I didn't mean anything by it.
No need to apologize. I know you didn't mean anything by it. It's just that you speak the truth, even when you're making a joke.
Mr. MacKay?
Miss Potter, I do appreciate you staying on here with me. More than you know. Having heard a kind, vibrant voice broadcasting across the Black Ocean these last few minutes, it reminds me that I'm not all alone in the world, even if it feels like I am. But I should go now.
No! Archie, please don't go.
Miss Potter, Cecile, when my fuel runs out, what you hear, it won't be pleasant. And I can't promise I'll meet my end with good grace.
I don't care about that.
But I do. Cecile, if you remember me at all, I want you to remember me. Like this.
Of course I'll remember you. But don't go. Not yet. Please.
All right. I'll stay on a little bit longer. But when the engines start to cut out, I sign off. Agreed?
Agreed.
So, Cecile, what do you do when you're not conversing on the radio with strange Scottish aviators?
How can you joke at a time like this?
Well, there'll never be a better time for it than right now.
I know, but it's not fair.
It's as fair as anything in life. I made this flight knowing the dangers involved. If it was peril-free, everyone would do it, yes?
That's not what I mean.
What do you mean, then?
It's just that it took you getting lost over the Atlantic for us to find each other.
Oh, the lengths a fellow will go to so he can find the right girl.
Oh, Archie.
Cecile, if I have any regrets... All right. Of the myriad regrets I have, not getting the opportunity to know you is foremost among them. See, you made it to the top of the list. It's time.
All right.
Goodbye, Cecile.
No. I won't say goodbye, because I'm not giving up hope. I won't give up on you, Archie. I'll never give up.
What in the world just happened?
Are you still mad that I called you in early?
No. Of course not. But I still... You swear this wasn't a gag?
Scout's honor.
Then I don't... She did say, try to be the first man to fly solo across the Atlantic, didn't she?
She did.
But Lucky Lindy set that record back in May 1927.
And what do you think that means?
If I told you what I think that means, you'd be calling the fellas in the white coats.
Don't count on it, or else I'd have to call a couple for myself, too. Seriously, just say what you're thinking.
Can you promise me this isn't some trick? You know, Raz the new guy?
I'd swear on a stack of Bibles if we had them.
All right. Don't say I didn't warn you. De Havilland Hound. That was a biplane, wasn't it? A long-range bomber built in the late 20s.
Yes.
The way she talked about the transatlantic flight record, it's as if it hadn't been broken. It's as if...
As if what?
As if the radio signal was coming from 1927.
Yeah.
What do you mean, yeah? Are you agreeing with me?
I am.
How long has this been going on?
Well, I've been here 17 years, and it was happening before then. Since 1927, in fact.
Since 1927? That's... 23 years. But how?
I don't know. No one does.
It's fantastical. Completely beyond belief. It goes the same way every year.
Every year in every detail. Like it was happening for the first time.
But wait a second. 23 years, and that woman, Cecile Potter, she can't be a day over 30.
It would seem that way, wouldn't it?
So she was 7 years old when this began?
No, she was just as you saw her this evening.
But that's...
Impossible? You sure you want to choose that word?
Steuben, I feel like there's something you're not telling me.
There is. Archie MacKay was indeed a Scottish aviator who made a transatlantic solo flight attempt a few weeks before Charles Lindbergh. His plane, a modified de Havilland DH-65 Hound bomber, went down off the coast, and was never recovered.
And what we heard was his final broadcast?
And it comes through on the tower radio every year, on the anniversary of his failed attempt.
All right. I mean, that explains the radio signal, but what about the woman? If she's been coming here to reenact that tragic night every year...
She has been.
Then how is it possible she hasn't aged at all in 23 years? You said it yourself, she looks the same now as she did in 1927.
You don't know?
No, I don't know.
It's because ghosts don't age.
What did you say?
Cecile Potter died of pneumonia in 1930.
But we saw her.
She said that she would never give up on Archie. And not even the grave could stop her from keeping her word.
So ends "And the Sky Has Taken Him" by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions and recorded at Melrose Music in Hollywood, California. Tonight's radio drama was written especially for Suspense by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Christina Nichols was Cecile Potter. Russell Webb was Archie Mackay. Damon Krall was Steuben, and Dan Flood was Lloyd. I'm your host, Damon Krall. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
You know what's better than reading a great magazine? Reading a great magazine that also helps you fight poverty. Megaphone Magazine is sold by homeless and low-income vendors on the streets of Vancouver and Victoria. Vendors buy magazines for 75 cents and sell them for $2. It's flexible, low-barrier work for people who may not have access to traditional jobs. Download the Megaphone app to find vendors and buy the magazine, even when you don't have change.
One, fire. Horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-
Tonight, The Last Martian by Frederick Brown. It was like any evening, but duller than most.
I was back in the city room. I'd just covered a boring banquet, and the food had been so bad that I felt cheated, even though it cost me nothing. Now, just for laughs, and my job, I was writing a long, glowing account of it.
City desk, Cargan. Yeah? You what? Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, why not? Okay, Barney. Yeah. Bill.
Yeah?
Finish typing that banquet story yet?
Uh-uh.
Finish it, huh? 30. Okay. You know Barney Welch, don't you?
Barney's bar? Of course I know him.
I know you know him. It's just a rhetorical question.
What about him?
He just phoned.
So?
You got a guy down there.
Who?
Claims to be from Mars.
But is he drunk or raving or both?
Barney doesn't know. He said there might be a gag store if you want to come over and talk to the guy.
Drinks on the expense account?
Yeah. You got a deal.
There wasn't a Trib reporter who didn't know Barney well enough to borrow money from him. I made for the bar like a St. Bernard makes for a fallen traveler and ordered a quick one with water on the side. Keep the bottle handy, Barney. Which one is the Martian?
You see the tall, dismal-looking guy sitting alone there in the booth?
Over there?
That's him.
What's the story?
Well, he says he just got in from Mars 2 hours ago, and he's trying to figure it out. He claims he's the last living Martian.
Mm-hmm. Does he know I'm a reporter?
But he'll talk to anybody who'll listen to him.
What's his name?
He says it's Yangan Dao.
I'll talk to him.
Listen, Bill.
Yeah?
Don't get him violent or anything. I don't want no trouble in my place.
Oh, now, don't worry, Barney. Look, dish up 2 beers for us, and I'll take them over with me. Barney drew 2 beers and cut off the head. He rang up 60 cents, gave me my change, and I went over to the Martian. Mr. Dow?
Yes?
You mind if I sit down?
Help yourself. It's a free country.
I brought you beer. Barney, the bartender, told me something about your problem.
Oh? Thanks for the beer.
Drink up.
Well, I suppose you think I'm out of my mind, but... Well, maybe you'll be right. The bartender probably thinks I've flipped my lid. Listen, are you a doctor?
Nope.
Do you think I'm insane?
I'm not a doctor, and I haven't even heard your story yet. How can I tell?
Okay, I'll tell you. I'll tell you everything that happened. Then you tell me if you think I'm all right. 2 hours ago, I was on Mars.
2 hours? How did you get here?
I don't know. That's the horrible thing. All I know is that the others were dead.
All of them? How do you know?
I saw them. I saw their bodies in the street. It was awful.
Now, wait a minute. You mean you're the last one? The last Martian?
Yes.
Well, that's a little hard to believe.
Listen, I was there. I was in this room in the city of Scar. I don't know why I was there, but I was. I was locked in. Then I got hungry, and there was no food. So I worked a stone out of the floor and started digging. It took 3 days. When I got out and reached the street... Everyone was dead, lying in the open.
What did you do?
I took a Targan, an energy plane, and flew it to Xandar. Xandar is the biggest city, the capital. Every place, it was the same. Hundreds of thousands of bodies, lying in the fields, the streets, as if everyone had died at the exact same instant. At Xandar, in the stadium...
I'm
in the stadium. There were 100,000 of them. As if they'd come there specially to die together. I landed my ship there.
In the stadium?
Yes.
That's it.
Well, there, in the stadium, they had built some sort of platform. On it was a column made of copper. Copper is a rare metal on Mars. And there was a push button.
Where?
In the copper column.
Oh.
And there was a Martian in a blue robe, a priest, right under the button. It was as though he pushed the button and died. And everybody else died with him.
Except you?
Yes. All except me.
And then?
And then I was on a Madison Avenue bus, riding to work, here in New York.
Oh, now wait a minute.
Listen, I know you don't believe me. I know it sounds as if I were stark raving mad, but
take it easy, huh? You know what I think?
What?
You've had some sort of terrible shock.
Oh, of course I have. There were 3 million of us. All dead.
I don't mean that kind of shock.
Of course, it was a dying world anyway. We didn't have more than 2 generations left. It was the krill.
What was the krill?
The disease. It reduced us to 1/30th of our population in 2 centuries.
These, 3 million, and they died of the krill?
No. The krill kills slowly. These people died like that. With a push of a button.
Well, why didn't they escape?
We tried to develop space travel, but we couldn't. We couldn't even reach Deimos or Phobos.
Where are they?
Our moons.
Oh, I don't know too much about this stuff.
It was horrible.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question, Mr. Down?
Anything you like.
Well, if the Martians didn't develop space travel, how do you think you got here in New York City?
I don't know. It's driving me wild. I'm Yangan Dao, a Martian. And I'm here in the body of an Earthman.
The body of an Earthman?
Of course. You don't think Martians look exactly like humans, do you? I'm 3 feet tall, weigh what would be 20 pounds here on Earth. I have 4 arms and 6 fingers on each hand.
Barney?
Yeah?
2 more beers, huh, with whiskey chasers?
Right.
Go on, Mr. Don. I don't mean to interrupt.
It frightens me.
Oh, I can understand that.
Give me a drink. You want some help?
Uh-uh. Thanks, Barney. Drink up, Mr. Down.
Thank you.
By the way, who is this Earthman whose body you've got?
Its name is Howard Wilcox.
Howard Wilcox, hmm? I'll just write that down. Address?
It's in the wallet. 45 Amber Court.
Mm-hmm. This Howard Wilcox, whose body you're in, does he have a family?
It is married to a female of this species.
Yes. Well, have you been home?
No.
Then how do you know?
I have all of its memories. I can do everything it could do. I know everything it knows.
Oh, I see.
I even have its tastes.
Beer, for instance.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You have a job? At the Humber Lamp Company, 34th Street.
Well, maybe you ought to call your wife.
No, it frightens me.
Why?
This body, it loves its wife. Let me buy us a round. There's money in these pockets.
Okay.
It's very good of you to listen to my story. Barkeep, another round, please.
Tell me, Mr. Dow, did you ever suspect before that you were a Martian?
Suspect? I am a Martian. Don't you understand?
Well, how did you get in here?
I told you I was... I mean, this body was on its way to work on a Madison Avenue bus, and then I was inside it. It was thirsty, so it stopped for a drink. And I thought maybe the bartender could give me some advice. So I started talking.
Don't you believe me? Listen, Howard, you should be due home for dinner by now. Now, you're making your wife worry. Why not phone her?
I'm afraid.
What's there to worry about? Whether you're young and doll or Howard Wilcox is a woman sitting home worrying.
I suppose you're right.
Of course I'm right.
You're very understanding.
Oh, not at all.
You wouldn't want to come with me, would you?
Hmm?
I mean, I'm sort of afraid.
Well, it would look funny.
I could tell her you're an old school friend. We could have dinner. And then maybe I could get to know her.
You really want me to come?
Would you?
Let me make a phone call first, okay?
Fine.
I rang up the Tribune and got Cargan at the city desk. Hi, Bill Everett.
Did you find him?
Uh-huh.
Well?
There's something strange about this guy.
You think he's insane?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? Is he or isn't he?
Well, he's
he's got the whole story so perfectly organized, he might even convince somebody it's true. He remembers every detail.
What do you figure you're going to do?
Well, I'm going home with him. I'm going to meet his wife and observe them.
How many drinks have you had?
Oh, I'm sober. Don't worry.
Me worry? Look, maybe you better come back here and I'll let Vincent handle this stuff.
No, that isn't necessary. Just let me tag along a while.
Okay. But if you want help, yell and I'll send Vincent.
I will. Don't worry.
What's this guy's name?
Howard Wilcox.
Address?
45 Amber Court.
Okay. Oh, and Bill.
Yes?
Just remember one thing.
What's that?
You could be playing with dynamite. Watch your step.
Number 45 Amber Court was an apartment down in the village. We were met at the door by a pretty woman in dungarees with a black hair and a ponytail with a red ribbon. Let me handle it, okay? I wish you would.
Howard, I was so worried.
This is Bill Everett. I'm an old boyhood chum of your husband, Mrs. Wilcox. We met and I asked Howard to have a few drinks and, I'm afraid it's all my fault.
Bill is having dinner with us.
If it isn't too much trouble.
Well, No, of course not.
Well, that's very generous of you.
Well, if you'll excuse me, I'd better start dinner. Howard?
Yes?
Are you all right?
Why, yes. Fine.
You didn't kiss me.
Well.
That's better. That's the first time in 11 years Howard hasn't kissed me when he came home.
Well, we stopped and had a few drinks. It was all my fault, really.
Look, just make yourself comfortable. I won't be long.
Do you think she suspects?
Of course not. I'll have to tell her.
You want to wind up in an institution?
No, but I can't keep up this pretense.
Just set your mind to it. Now, after a while, it'll become natural. You'll forget that you ever were a Martian.
You do believe me, then, about being a Martian?
Of course.
Oh, that's good to know.
Now, look, whatever you do, don't tell your wife. It would ruin her life.
I'll try not to tell her.
Try very hard. Now, don't tell anybody.
You and the bartender know, of course.
Oh, we'll keep it quiet. Don't worry.
Good.
You think you can carry it off?
I'll try.
Good boy. Now, tell you what. If you get into any kind of trouble, I mean, if you just have to talk to somebody about it, give me a call, hmm? Here, at this number. Now, if I'm not in, you leave a message with my boss. His name is Cargan.
Cargan.
You promise?
I promise.
Fine.
You're very kind. This body... I've never met anybody so kind here on Earth.
Forget it.
Well, what have you two been discussing so secretly?
Just business. Oh, I'm sorry about being late, dear.
Well, you might have phoned. After all, you were only a few blocks from the house. It isn't as if you were on Mars or someplace.
Dinner went pretty well, and Elaine Wilcox turned out to be an expert at shish kebab, which is one of my favorites. After dinner, I still had a couple of hours to put into the paper, so I went back. Cargan came over to me right away. Well, is he or isn't he? He's a Martian, all right. No question about that.
You're very funny.
I have my moments.
Would you mind telling me exactly where you've been for 3 hours and what you've been doing?
I talked to Yangan Dao. That's his Martian name. Then we had dinner at his home. Very nice. Shish kebab.
What about the story?
Oh, yeah, the story. Well, it seems that he was locked in a room in the city of Skar. And he got out and saw all the dead bodies of the entire Martian. Then he flew to the Capitol and saw a button that a priest had pressed, and the next thing he knew, he was inside an Earthman named Howard Wilcox riding a Madison Avenue bus. Want me to write it up?
Is that all you've got to tell me?
That's all. Listen, this guy's going to be perfectly all right as soon as he gets used to the idea that he's Howard Wilcox.
He is, sir. I suppose you're a qualified psychiatrist?
Well, I'm qualified to judge this.
I'd better send Vincent over there.
There's no need for that.
I have a distinct feeling you've let your emotions get into the act.
Well, what's wrong with emotions?
They don't belong in this business.
Well, Cargan, this is a decent enough guy. He's a little bewildered, maybe. Now, why not let him live out his life in peace?
He may be dangerous.
Don't you trust my judgment?
We can't afford to pass up anything important.
Oh, you're exaggerating.
Maybe. Vincent.
Yes, Mr. Cargan.
I want you to do a follow-up on a story that Bill has started. A man named Howard Wilcox who thinks he's a Martian.
Oh?
Bill has the address.
Now, if anything happens to this guy, they're liable to be questions and accusations.
Vincent can handle that out of it. You want the full treatment on this story, Mr. Cargan?
If you think the man is a menace, given the full treatment. Okay, Mr. Cargan.
I gave Vincent the address, feeling like a murderer, and then I beat it to the nearest phone booth and called Howard Wilcox's home. His wife, Elaine, answered.
Yes?
Oh, Mrs. Wilcox, this is Bill Everett again.
Oh, did you forget something?
No, I have something to tell you, and it may sound a little weird, but bear with me.
Oh, what is it?
A man from my newspaper is coming over. His name is Vincent. Now, he's a big, ugly man with a scar on his lip.
He's coming over here.
He's on his way now.
Well, what for?
Well, that's the part you aren't going to believe, Mrs. Wilcox.
Well, try me and see.
He's going to murder your husband.
I'm afraid I didn't hear you.
I said he's coming over to murder your husband.
You and Howard did do quite a bit of drinking.
I'm trying to do you a favor. Now, listen to me.
I'm listening.
Send him away. Tell him Howard had to leave town. Do you hear me?
I hear you, but really...
Please, Mrs. Wilcox, if your husband means anything to you...
Well, of course he does, but why not call the police?
They'll laugh at you. I'm coming right over. I'll explain when I get there. And remember, your husband's life depends on this. I didn't know whether I convinced her or not. It all sounded so terribly melodramatic. Anyway, I hopped into a cab and told him to use a heavy foot on the gas pedal, and about 15 minutes later, I arrived at 45 Amber Court.
Oh, it's you.
Was Vincent here?
There was a man here from the Tribune, yes.
Did you do as I told you?
Well, I got Howard out of the house. I sent him out with some mozzarella cheese and gave him a couple of places that don't carry it.
What'd Vincent say?
I told him Howard wouldn't be back in town till tomorrow. He said he'd be back.
Did he say what he wanted?
Just that he had some good news for my husband.
Some good news? May I come in?
I wish you would. I want to know what this is all about. Sit down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you mind explaining?
You won't believe me.
You keep saying that.
Okay, Mrs. Wilcox. Your husband, Howard... is a Martian.
A Martian?
That's right.
I see. And when did you discover this about my husband?
This morning.
Would you mind telling me just when he arrived? From Mars, that is.
This morning.
You don't say.
Told you wouldn't believe me.
Oh, I haven't said that yet. You're sure Howard is a Martian?
Yep. He claims to be the last Martian. Look, see if I can make it clear. There was a plague sweeping Mars. Now, they devised a means of transporting their intellects through space to Earth. Their dead bodies remained behind. Now, Howard, your husband, was confined in an institution, so he didn't get to go with the other Martian souls. He dug his way out and went to the capital city where the energy machine was located.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there was enough left to send his intelligence down here where it landed in the body of one Howard Wilcox.
How did you find this out?
He told me.
Mr. Everett, if you don't mind, I'm rather tired. First you tell me someone's going to murder Howard, then you tell me he's the man from Mars. I'd like to get some rest, if you don't mind.
I'm trying to convince you your husband is in danger.
If Howard is a Martian, just why does your Mr. Vincent want to kill him?
Because Mr. Vincent is a Martian, too.
Uh-huh. I suppose the editor of the Tribune is also a Martian?
No, not the editor, just the editor of the City Desk.
And you, Mr. Everett, are you a Martian, too?
Matter of fact, yes.
Good night.
Just won't see it, will you?
Good night, Mr. Everett.
Okay, I tried my best.
Martians, indeed. Oh, Howard, thank heaven.
I couldn't get the mozzarella.
It doesn't matter. Tell me, Howard, are you a Martian?
What? Why, yes. How did you know?
Oh, woman's intuition. It's terribly late, dear. Let's turn in.
No, not yet. I want to know how you knew I was a Martian.
Howard, please, I've had just about enough of this nonsense today.
It isn't nonsense to me. Only this morning I was Yang Gandal, a Martian. Now I'm in the body of your husband.
Is this a joke you and your friend, Mr. Everett, invented to torture me? Because if it is...
It isn't a joke. It's the truth.
Howard, I just can't stand much more of this. I'm beginning to wonder if it's me. Who could that be at this hour?
I'll answer it. Yes?
You are Mr. Howard Wilcox?
Yes?
My name is Vincent. I'm a reporter from the Trib.
Yes?
May I come in?
Yes.
Well, who is... Oh, Mr. Vincent.
I see your husband has unexpectedly returned from out of town, Mrs. Wilcox.
Now, look here.
Would you mind telling me why you lied to me?
Yes, I would.
Does it have anything to do with the fact that you know your husband's secret?
What secret?
That he is young and dull. A Martian.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think you do.
Why is there such concern? I am Yang and Dao. I am a Martian. The last Martian, as far as I know.
That is where you're wrong, Mr. Wilcox.
Wrong?
You see, there are many of us.
Many? Like me?
Hundreds of thousands. We were teleported to Earth during the Great Migration and found ourselves, like you, inside human beings.
Then I'm not alone. You do understand my position.
Perfectly.
I can establish contact. We can remember our old home.
Unfortunately, no.
I don't understand.
Sadly enough, young Endow, you were considered mentally ill on Mars. Ill enough so that you were institutionalized.
But
here on Earth, a person like you represents a distinct threat to us.
How do I threaten you?
You're unstable. You may give us away. That would spoil it.
Spoil what?
Our plan.
Plan?
You have not heard of the plan?
I heard of no plan. I was in an institution.
Yes. You are certain now?
Of course. What plan?
If you knew, I would have been forced to destroy you. You just saved your own life, young and dull, and that of Howard Wilcox as well.
What are you going to do?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Aren't you afraid that I'll do something?
Such as?
Tell people my husband is a Martian.
Really, Mrs. Wilcox, you know better. You'd be laughed at or sent to the nearest psychiatric clinic. No, we aren't at all concerned with the fact that people will betray our presence here on Earth. I'm sure you can appreciate the reaction if you were to phone the police and tell them that the Trib reporters are all Martians.
Well, not all. Just the city editor and yourself and Mr. Everett.
How did you know that?
Perhaps I'm one myself, Mr. Vincent.
It isn't possible.
Why not?
Are you... Tell me where you were born. What city?
I was born in Undamel near the dead town of Kula.
Your name?
Zanat Kree.
You are party to the plan?
The plan to take over the Earth? Of course.
Your husband, young and dull. Why did you not inform him?
For the same reason you did not. He is unstable. But there is no need to worry. I will care for him.
Amazing.
Now, would you mind leaving us alone? We have many things to discuss.
Of course. Amazing. Positively amazing.
I was standing in Barney's bar having a double scotch in the rocks, and Vincent came in looking like a man who spent the last 3 hours in a KitchenAid mixer with the dial on Fluffy. He came over and ordered without so much as a look at me.
Here it is, Mr. Vincent.
Thanks.
You okay?
Sure, sure.
By the way,
did you fellas take care of that crackpot that was in here this afternoon, the one who thought he was a Martian?
Sure.
Just a drunk, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Wouldn't you say so, Bill?
Oh, definitely.
Well, you see, Bonnie, sometimes you can't tell the Martians from the Earthmen. You know?
It's getting to be that way, Mr. Vincent. Right, Bill?
That's right, Bonnie. Integration. That's what it is. I gave Bonnie a sly wink and lifted my glass along with Vincent. Of course, Bonnie understood. You see, he's one of us, too.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine.
There's only one way that old clunker is going to make you feel good again. Donate it to Bullying Canada. Check this out. Free towing or pickup of your old vehicle. A tax-deductible receipt. And a super easy process. Online at bullyingcanada.ca.
And that's all the time that we have for Scald's Hall here on CITR 101.9 FM. Coming up in a moment, we'll have Canada Post Rock with John. So from all of us here, please have a safe and happy weekend.
Online at bullyingcanada.ca.